Okay, thank you. And I believe at this point, we're moving on to Mr. Lynn's final rebuttal witness. Is that correct?
Yes, thank you. Mr. Barton was previously sworn on the very first day of Miles' testimony. So I just ask him to introduce himself again and then remind you all how he fits into the Miles picture here.
Sure, and I'm getting quite a bit of feedback. Mr. Ehrlichman, would you mind muting for the moment? Great, thank you.
Well, good afternoon, happy Friday. My name is Brad Barton. I'm with Miles Sand and Gravel Company. I'm a vice president, general manager of the aggregate operations for the entire company.
Okay, when you were here before, you testified orally about a snow and ice inclement weather policy. And you were asked, I can't remember by whom, whether or not that was a written policy or just a verbal one. And you went to check, and then I want you to tell the hearing examiner what you found.
Yes, we have, Mr. Reeves, we have a written policy that follows our inclement weather planning procedures. Of course, you know, in the Northwest, it's not common practice, but when the snow hits the ground, we're very proactive, both just from a probably an easy way to say it would be an industry standard as well as a written policy specific to our company. And again, I think I stated this before, as a part of that procedure, we send supervisors or managers out prior to releasing any trucks on the road from a pure safety standpoint. So good practice to have in our business for sure.
And so you found there was, in fact, a written policy that reflected what your oral testimony was?
Yes, we do have that.
And Mr. Examiner, I've circulated that, I think, on the 2nd of September. I'd just like to offer it as an exhibit. I think on my list, it would, well, I guess it would be B99, since I think we took the truck and pup diagrams and made them county exhibits.
So the one identified in Jason Davignon's table as Miles weather policy, you're suggesting B99, is that right?
Yes.
Any objections?
That's my suggestion.
The other attorneys to this being included? Okay, great. It's admitted. Thank you.
And then I wanted to ask you, Mr. Barton, whether the truck diagram that was introduced and discussed by Mr. Norris as the one he used for the auto turn analysis, that's truck and pup diagram number 2, which was exhibit C54, does that reflect the truck that you would expect to use at this mine were it to be permitted?
Yes, it is.
Okay. And are there other configurations that might have more impacts or different impacts than that truck of those dimensions?
We do have other configurations, but this is the one configuration with the tongue lengths and the specific wheelbase that would have, if it's going to have an impact, this one would have the most, and that's why we used it. To understand the corners both at Prairie Road and Grip Road.
Okay, so this is sort of the worst case of the expected trucks from a tracking standpoint?
Yes, other ones have A trains, B trains. We've heard in other testimony, some of them have trailers with turn dollies and they do track differently than this would. And this, again, is a worst case scenario.
Okay. And then the only other topic I wanted to discuss with you is that there was some testimony expressing concern about the edge of the buffer, the wetland and river buffer, and how that might be treated during your mine operations, how you mark the edge and what potential there is for stormwater to exit outside the boundary of the mine and into the buffer. And I'd just like you to describe for the hearing examiner the operational process that you would go through in working at the edge of a buffer such as that.
Okay, yeah, I think from the drawing aspect, it's difficult with the cross sections, they are exaggerated to orchestrate operationally how we deal with this. So from an operations standpoint, of course, we would, per the setback, whether it's a buffer or a property line, what have you, in relationship to the mining plan, we would flag through survey that line. And one of the things that was stated on the record earlier by others is that we would clear the complete site. We do not do that. And in specific to approaching a buffer, again, we would segmentally clear. And then remembering that that includes removal of topsoil, trees, and so on. And we're also working in a gravel pit, which by implementing sound best management practices, we're working on the inside of the active mine towards these sensitive areas after the silt fences have been placed. And probably the best way to explain it in this particular situation, the active mine site is going to be on, in this case, on the west side of that buffer line. And we would approach that again carefully and with good planning. We do this on a regular basis. And the, and any storm waters that may be happen from obviously from a rainstorm and or in conjunction with the clearing process would be directed inside the mine. And in this case, the cross section shows what we would call a false top. So we would be working on the mine side below that false top and then work towards the buffer line in a very, very controlled manner. And again, as I said earlier, we do this on a regular basis with all our mine sites.
You said toward the buffer line. Did you mean away from the buffer line and toward the mine site?
No, from we would work from the mine site towards the buffer line in a controlled manner, thus keeping the water in the active side of the site, and in this case, allowing it not to go in part as the cross section depicts towards the.
Okay, river. So basically, you're creating a low spot on the mine side of the buffer line.
Correct. Correct. And in this particular case, that would be done in again, a phased manner and quite quickly in those areas that are more sensitive than others based on the topographical features. Again, controlling any potential stormwater and erosion.
Okay. And is that part of the idea of sequentially clearing and mining the property? Is that part of your reclamation permit that the DNR has to approve typically?
Yes, it is part of it. And it's part of good mining practices as well.
Okay. And then what happens with reclamation? At what point do you reclaim slopes within the mine?
Once in that segment that, of course, we've removed the mineable materials, and in this case, I believe there's four. Well, in fact, there is four sections. We would start in the first segment, and it does a couple things. Of course, we control our entry as we approach any buffers, address the active site, and then in that particular segment, in response to the slopes that are created, they're. Other than any safety berms, they're sloped to grade, and the topsoil is placed. And then depending on, again, on the underlying use, this would be forestry. The trees are, after any hydro seeding, the trees are placed per the DNR approved plan. And thus the slopes are stable moving forward, again, working into each additional segment.
Okay, so I think, You kind of broke up a little bit when you said the topsoil was, did you say replaced? Because do you remove that at the beginning and then store it for reclamation purposes?
Yes, by DNR regulations, we have to maintain a topsoil bank of soil, and it's calculated as a part of our planning and well submitted to the DNR. and that material that's stored in appropriate areas, the again, the topsoil that's removed from the active mine site, again, stored, and then it's replaced on, in this case, my description, the slope, and again, reseeded, replanted with timber, and then we move it in the next section.
Okay. So how much of the mine site would actually be open at one time, just in rough terms anyway?
In this case, probably depending on the nature of the material within that segment, I would venture to say maybe 10 acres. But remembering that a portion of that may be cleared and the perimeters where we have to store the topsoil would be included in that calculation. And that obviously that footprint would grow, but at the same time, as we move into the mine, at the same time we're reclaiming as well.
Post-mine. Okay, so it's sort of ebb and flow. You clear, remove topsoil, mine, and then reclaim, and then move on to another area that's newly opened?
Yes, yes. And obviously by looking at the plan that's on record, you know, the our approach in this is adjusting and reclaiming, you know, in the mining process, the slopes where you'll see typically more activity in the floors. So, but it's a progressive situation. And this one, it's a gravel site, remove the material, and it's all contained within the excavation area when it comes to erosion control, any stormwater issues, and maintaining that footprint segmentally in our approach helps us control that. And again, it's part of a best management practice, both by mining and encouraged by DNR, as well as our company.
Brad, you froze up there. You said it's a best management practice, both, and then you froze. So.
Oh, sorry. It's a best management practice at the DNR reclamation standards. It's good mining practices, as well as, you know, what our company desires to do, being proactive in that overall mining practice.
And I don't want to dig too deeply back into the DOE regulation, but is the management of the stormwater something that they monitor and regulate as part of their permitting process?
Yes, we have a on-site plan that they can review specific to that type of operation. And we, in this case, there's no process waters associated, so it'd be stormwater, and we're required to report monthly and quarterly to the Department of Ecology.
Per the approval. That's all I have. Okay. That's all I have. Thank you.
Excuse me. Thank you. Mr. D'Avignon, any questions of this witness?
No questions, Mr. Examiner. Thank you.
Okay. Mr. Ehrlichman, any questions? I think there was a question or two at the very beginning about a road, but...
Yes, thank you. Afternoon, Mr. Barton.
Good afternoon.
I wanted to just ask you a little bit about the truck traffic that you mentioned. This has been a long hearing for everybody. And as you know, our job has been to try to present some facts that would suggest a need to condition the project to minimize the heavy truck impacts. And I'm wanting to ask you, in light of the fact that your traffic engineer didn't study traffic impacts to the east of the mine on Grip Road, does it make sense, or would the applicant be willing to clarify and agree on the record voluntarily not to run gravel trucks out to the east there?
Well, I think I'm going to object to the question in that it goes beyond the scope of the examination.
I concur it's beyond the scope of the examination of this witness. That said, Mr. Barton, if you feel like answering, go right ahead.
Well, I think again, I don't want to get in the back and forth that Mr. Norris went through, but I think it was studied. I think we're on record saying for local deliveries, and the primary focus of the gravel deliveries are going west, and that's shown in the traffic study.
So it's your position that the traffic safety issues were studied going to the east of the mine?
I think what I said, Mr. Ehrlichman, was per the traffic study, per Mr. Norris's study, we did look at traffic flows overall, both west, east, north, south, and we included in that study 5% going to the east. And in the conversations with Mr. Norris, it was based on local deliveries. So I think that's enough said.
Okay. Yeah, because you heard him testify that it was, he used the applicant's information to use that 5% trip assignment, correct?
Which is common practice in any traffic study. Yes.
Okay. So is it reasonable for the hearing examiner, the public, to expect that gravel trucks will not be going to the east? Mr. Norris talked about there being employee trucks and that sort of thing.
He's the expert, and I think you heard his testimony. I'm repeating what he told you, whether it's an employee trip or a local market delivery. Again, the majority of the trips are going to go west. And I think, as he said, and I would concur, it is up to Mr. Reeves, the hearing examiner, to look at that and condition the site associated with the science and the studies that we've brought forth.
Okay. And what is a market delivery?
I think the best way to understand that would be if somebody living east of the site called and said they want a load of gravel, and that particular truck was going from, in this case, the Grip Road site to whatever area east of our entrance, that would be a local delivery. And I think it's safe to say in this particular situation, that is a rural area. So again, that is supported by our 5% estimate. The majority of the traffic, again, is going to go west towards the active, urban area feeding the construction activities, again, in the more urban areas of Skagit County, back towards Burlington and Mount Vernon or one of our sites.
Okay, thank you. So as the hearing examiner does that evaluation that you just mentioned, in your mind, would it be reasonable for the examiner to impose a condition that says no more than 5% of the gravel deliveries can go to the east?
Well, that's his choice, but I think we have many decisions under our umbrella that speak in that arena to local deliveries.
I'm not sure I understand the answer.
Rather than based on 5%, based on a local delivery from a condition standpoint, but that's really up to him. I can make a suggestion, but he's going to make the decision.
Uh-huh. Thank you.
You bet.
If there was a call for gravel in Cedral Woolley, would the trucks be likely to make that local delivery going east or west?
Depends on where the project is, as well as we do this on a regular basis, and we know what sites and what routes are most productive for us as well, and quite frankly, as safe. So that all goes into the methodology in answering your question.
Just from a distance standpoint, would it be, I don't know the roads and system like you do, would it be shorter to go west or east if you were delivering to downtown Cedral Woolley?
Well, that by distance, if we had direct access, to answer your question, it'd be shorter to go east. But from a practical approach standpoint, that one may not be the site we use, and two, we may, because of our routing, choose to go to the west instead of going east, depending on the volume, the nature of the material. So I think maybe another, I know I'm saying local deliveries, but that 5%, as stated in the hearing or in Gary's study, kind of speaks to our expectation of what will go that way.
Understood. And I'm just trying to see, you know, obviously how much willingness there is on the applicant's part to voluntarily accept some proposed conditions that might address some of the concerns that you've heard, you know, here today and in the other days of the hearing. So let's move on to another question. I appreciate your responses to that. Did you have something to add? I'm sorry.
No. I said thank you. Sorry.
Yeah. Thank you. Similarly, or along a similar vein, you talked about the typical length of the trucks and that there are truck rigs that are maybe less than the 74 feet, correct? The truck pup trailer combinations that are less than the 74 feet long?
They may or may not be, but their axle configurations can be subtly different.
Okay. When it comes to the what we've heard, or we heard you offer to widen two curves on Grip Road, if you were able to obtain the right of way, would that offer include widening the road to the county road standard of 34 feet surface total?
Well, I don't know if I can speak to that. I think what I can speak to is we've offered to widen the lanes, as Gary stated, to avoid any encroachments off the pavement edge and or center line. Mm-hmm. And as I think I stated this earlier, but just to restate it, we believe we can accomplish that based on the information that we have in front of us through the auto turn analysis, working in with that right away prism. But I will say that, as you know, and most everybody here knows, that this is a rural county, and whether those shoulders can be accomplished in that I guess, speaking from a countywide perspective, that's a whole different topic in my mind.
Right. So, I know.
Yeah.
I think we appreciate, my client appreciates, that, you know, you've got a lot more sites and a lot more rural roads you're dealing with than just this one.
Well, as you know, he deals with the same problems as agricultural business.
Anybody in business does in Skagit County. But I guess, you know, what I'm trying to understand or see how far your offer goes is, you know, is it a minimum offer, or is it more than that? I mean, the minimum being what you just said, which was, well, we'll widen it, you know, so that the trucks aren't crossing the center line or going off the pavement. But as we've sort of gone back and forth today, you know, the trucks have mirrors and they're wider, and some, you know, there's variations and so forth in the way people drive, you know. So is there some flexibility there in your offer to do more than sort of the minimum to on paper, you know, address that crossover and edge of pavement issue?
Well, I think the right answer in my mind is we're trying to be very proactive here. And this is, again, as I said in my original testimony, this is the first time that we've been able to talk about Grip Road outside of the Prairie S turns. And I think from an engineering standpoint, and again, not to get back into the weeds, but we would propose the lane widening, working with the county and their their public works staff and engineers to see how the, how that would overall look. And I'm not trying to sidestep your question. Then once we understand the safety component of that and how that in conjunction with the auto turn, would we look at areas beyond that? I guess that's up for discussion, and in part Mr. Reeves is going to play into some of that decision making process as well, I would assume.
Fair enough. Thank you. Mm-hmm. Also related to this question of operating that type of truck and rig on grip road safely, it's come up many times during this hearing that the traffic analysis all along appeared to be based on an annual truck trip count of, I think it was 11,750 is what Mr. Norris testified to. And
I'm sorry, but I do have to note an objection. We're just completely, I asked him one question about trucks, which is whether or not this is the right truck. And now we're back to annual averages and everything else.
I can put it in terms of the different trucks. I mean,
by saying the word truck doesn't then give leeway to go well beyond the scope of the one very simple question that this witness was asked. So I'm going to sustain the objection.
Explain the relevancy to his original testimony here just now, Mr. Examiner?
No, you can include it in any final brief on why I made a mistake.
I can't get the answer from the witness through my brief.
There is no answer because I sustained the objection. There's no question that's being asked.
Well, since the traffic analysis was done based on the truck shown in exhibit, I guess it was 50, I'll get the numbers right here. If someone knows, jump in. But
well, I'm guessing you're just asking the same thing in a different way.
Well, Mr. Examiner, with all due respect, if I could first get the question out before you limit it.
Okay, go ahead. And
thank you.
Respect is questionable.
No, I'm sincere.
Ignoring my rulings and then just doing whatever you want to do does not display respect. But go ahead with your question.
Yeah, thank you. Mr. Barton, exhibit C53 is the new truck depiction, and you testified that that was the one that was used in the auto turn analysis, correct?
I did, yes.
Okay. And that's approximately 74 feet in length, 74 feet 11 inches, correct?
In that depiction, yes.
Okay. If the hearing examiner was concerned and wanted to condition the truck traffic from this project on Grip Road, would one way to do that be to specify a shorter length of truck trailer that's in your repertoire? Is there such a thing that's less than the 74 feet 11 inches?
Well, if we're going to mitigate for any crossovers on whether it's prairie, which we've already agreed to do, in this case volunteering on the Grip Road, as long as we're staying within the lane widths, as we're telling you we can per the auto turn, this particular truck, as I stated earlier, is, and as Bill shared, is the worst case scenario. So anything else that we would have would in some cases probably not even require as wide of lane modification. I don't know if that answers your question or not, but
kind of. My question is, what other lengths are within your suite of trucks that you described?
Oh, Well, I think other lengths are going to be close to overall bumper to tail in this 75 foot range. And in some cases, we have trucks that exceed that length and are permitted to do so. But their wheelbase configuration, their turn dollies allow them to navigate roads differently. And that is, again, why we use this particular truck configuration to make sure that those crossovers were dealt with.
Right. Thank you. But I'm wondering if you have in the suite of trucks that you mentioned, weren't you suggesting that there are trucks that are shorter and therefore the auto turn analysis is conservative?
I didn't say shorter. I said that navigate because of their axle configurations.
Okay.
Windy roads. And in our industry, this is a standard, very common truck configuration that in this case, it's a five, what we call a five and a three, as noted on the drawing.
So what we see is what we get here. I mean, what we see in that exhibit 53 is what you're proposing out there.
I think what we've tried to do, Tom, is take a worst case scenario from a truck configuration standpoint and use science and engineering to say, this is what will happen per the auto turn analysis, and we're going to address it, knowing that it's kind of like the station wagon and a pickup and a Volkswagen. The Volkswagen versus a pickup is going to navigate something a little bit differently, to your point, but this is what we use for a transportation vehicle, and these type of units are in greater number than the other type of units. So again, I don't know if I'm answering your question, but I would say if you're asking me, do we want to
limit? I think you answered it.
No, let me finish, please. Do we want to limit ourselves to a different type of configuration because you want it shorter? No, because we're showing you by science that we can make this work.
Yeah, I don't have a preference. I was just trying to clarify your statement. I thought you were indicating that there were some shorter lengths that you use in your repertoire. You've answered that there really aren't, correct?
Correct. In a truck configuration, yes.
Great. No, that's all I wanted to clarify. Okay. Thank you.
Does that conclude then?
I'm looking at my notes here of his... So... in terms of reducing impacts, which is what you've been talking about, mitigating the impacts of these 74-foot trucks, are there any other conditions that haven't been presented by you or your company in this proceeding that you can think of that you'd like to offer that would help on the safety issue we've been talking about?
Well, I would say, and that's a big question. I think we have looked at this and studied this particular site for, I think, over 6 years and tried to address questions along the way that have grown in nature, some that were asked repetitively and so on. And I think our science and our studies in working with the county staff, and we've made a lot of large steps here to answer, I guess, your question. And so I'm satisfied with what the record's demonstrating, that we can mitigate any impacts through our studies and what's been proposed safely. We're good operators. And again, I could go on and on, and we're proud of that fact. And this, I think it gets back into what I stated earlier. So hopefully that answers in part your question.
And I take the answer as no, there are no other additional conditions we haven't heard of that you wanted to offer, correct?
Well, I think, yes, correct. I'll just leave it.
Okay. Yeah. Thank you. I'm done. Thank you very much.
Okay. Thank you. Mr. Loring.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Examiner. I do have a few questions. Hello, Mr. Barton. Good afternoon.
Hi, Mr. Loring. Thank you. Same to you.
Thank you. You mentioned earlier the policy for inclement weather, and I'm looking at what has now been marked as B99. I'm assuming you have that in front of you.
I do.
That, I just want to ask you a question or two about it. That policy, or it's an inclement weather planning document, right? That's what it says across the top?
Yes.
Okay. And it doesn't actually identify any criteria for figuring out when or where trucks would be prevented from driving anywhere or rerouted, right?
Not specifically, no. It's no, it talks in general terms, how we assess any of the sites. Yes.
Sure. It speaks more about not having maybe employees come in if weather is inclement, that sort of thing, right?
It does, yes.
Okay.
And I note, I promise to read it closely.
Just don't worry, Mr. Examiner. I know we're all at the end here. I know, we're racing to the barn. But I just wanted to put it out there and make sure it was clear about what it actually says. Mr. Barton, you spoke about that, you called that truck diagram your worst case scenario. Is that your largest capacity vehicle that you were showing? That's Exhibit C-54.
In capacity, yes. That truck is legal by wheelbase and axle configuration to 105.5 in that configuration to answer your question. Yes.
Oh, 105.5 meaning it can carry
105,500 pounds in total. The net payload, and you remember this, sorry, right. Tom, remember this, yes. Back and forth may vary depending on truck configuration, whether it's 34, 33, 32, and so on.
Okay, understood. Thank you. And you're not proposing to limit hauling just to this vehicle or any other vehicles, right?
No, we are not.
Okay. You talked a little bit about how you would conduct the mining, and so I want to ask just a few questions about that. First, I want to ask, are you aware that based on the cross section, the only one that is in the record, that the high point would actually be cut into, and so it would lower the top of the hill adjacent to the Samish River wetland?
Yes, and I think I termed that, Mr. Loring, a false top based on the defined brim of the hill by the experts.
Okay, but we don't have those experts saying that cross-section is incorrect, right?
Sorry, say that again.
No expert is saying that the cross sections are incorrect, right?
No.
That, okay. And it was just the one cross section?
Yes.
Okay. You also talked about a DNR reclamation permit. Do you have that permit at this point?
No, we do not. The only thing we have is conceptual plans. Once we would, of course, as you know, we would get through the land use hearing and providing it's approved, then we would propose the final set to the DNR and then wait for their acknowledgement that that's meets their requirements, and they'd issue the mining permit. So it follows the SM6 sign off from the county back to the DNR.
Understood. Mm-hmm. You talked about the reclamation occurring with four segments. Is that familiar? Is that right?
Yeah, I think, excuse me, but yes, that the plan that we have, the draft plan that we have, shows four different segments. I don't have it right in front of me, but it's shown in 1, 2, 3, 4, and that was the draft proposed mining plan.
And those segments are roughly 25% of the site, right?
In this
each one
situation, yes.
Yeah. Yes. And you would finish one and then start on the next. Is that how it would work?
In a perfect world, yes. Sometimes and DNR obviously inspects us annually and works with us and sees by aerial photography exactly what we're doing. But generally that's our plan. Sometimes we do based on market and deposits. It subtly can be outside maybe one or two segments. It varies pit to pit.
Okay. So there could be times when you're working on mostly one, but also some of another segment?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay. And as part of that reclamation process, how long does it take for trees that are replanted to grow to maturity?
It's a great question. So in the reprod side of things, those typically you thin at 18 years on a fir tree and selectively thin or harvest at 30 years cycle time for fir. And this plantation is roughly 45 years to from maximize your overall harvest and return on your timber.
Okay. So we're talking in a forestry setting, roughly 45 years before the tree matures enough to be harvested again.
I'm sorry, and I'm not the forestry, but yes, in a perfect world to maximize your return, but what we call pre-merch, we do that depending on what the market is doing. It can be as early as 30 years.
Okay.
And I'm speaking specifically to fir.
Okay. Douglas fir in particular?
Yes.
Okay. And Douglas fir, are those the dominant trees at the site?
That this plantation, when to answer your question, across the entire 720 plus acres is mixed. It's Doug fir, hardwoods, maple, alder, and so on.
Okay. But either way, we're talking 3 decades before a tree that is cut now is going to be roughly back to the shape that it was in before it was cut. Does that sound right?
This particular plantation here is at about 22 years in the mining area.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's see. You testified just a few moments ago. I don't have much more. This is it. That Miles is trying to be very proactive in this matter. And I believe you were talking about proposed improvements at Grip Road and Prairie Road with some of the turns. Is that what you were talking about there, about being proactive?
Well, I think in general, yes, and which would include that those two locations as well as others. Our entrance, the Grip Road, the intersection at Prairie and Grip, the S turns, and even, you know, back to our entrance, some additional paving that we spoke to earlier.
Okay.
I think it's all inclusive.
Okay. And you've testified to some of that during this hearing. A lot of that is new since this hearing began, right? It hasn't been part of the public record.
I don't know if a lot of it's new. I think that when you say public record, I believe the S corners have been addressed on Prairie Road. I think our entrance was approved originally by the county, and yes, some of that's been expanded on. I think the newest item here is that, and again, as I've said earlier, this is our first time we've had the ability to share it, has been the auto turn analysis and the Grip Road widening per se that we're saying we're willing to do.
Okay. Let me just follow up then. Strike that. Did Miles propose any work on Grip Road or the curves there prior to the county's issuance of the mitigated determination of non-significance?
I don't believe so. No.
Okay. And the work that you were just discussing at the intersection of the Private Hall Road and Grip Road, that the most recent plans for that, were those in front of the county before it issued its MDNS?
Yes, I believe so. They were.
Okay. And are there plans for the Prairie Road S-curves? Are there plans that were reviewed by the county prior to issuing the MDNS?
Not detailed engineered plans, but the requirement, as I understand it, through the auto turn analysis that it would be widened was in before the MDNS.
Okay. So no plans, those that anybody could review specifically to see what would happen there?
Outside, well, engineered plans for construction purposes, which the public works would have to ultimately approve, have not been submitted yet.
Okay. And you referred to public works. Is it your position that only public works or the county should have the opportunity to review materials about the different development that will occur prior to the county issuing a mitigated determination of non-significance?
Well, I think from a road construction, Mr. Loring, if I'm understanding your question correctly, they are the officials that review those construction plans to meet their particular requirements for the road work.
And I understand that. And I think maybe you didn't quite understand the question. It was whether you believe they're the only ones who should have access to that information and that members of the public should not, do not need to have access to that information as part of the CEPA review process.
Well, I think that's a better question for them. If they being the governing authority in my mind, approve that plan to meet that criteria, yeah, how the public plays into that, I guess I don't understand the process well enough to answer that whether correctly or incorrectly.
That's fair enough. Yeah. I don't have any other questions. Thanks for your time.
You bet. Thank you.
Mr. Lynn, any follow-up?
No.
Okay. So I believe that would then conclude the presentation of witnesses. So, Mr. Barton, thank you for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Reeves.
Okay. Housekeeping quickly. I'm looking at, I printed off Mr. D'Avignon's helpful little spreadsheet, and it looks like going down the list, he had suggested that Ordinance 2008-0014 be proposed as C-52, which I think makes sense, especially given... Mr. D'Avignon.
I think after today, we've... C-52, I think, is actually an Excel spreadsheet that Mr. Lynn had presented. C-53 would be the otter turn analysis, and C-54 would be the second truck and pup, or the first truck. I forget how these went. I maybe don't have the greatest notes, but I think the ordinance would end up being C-56.
Okay, sorry. What was the Excel spreadsheet, Mr. Lynn?
That was some crash data that was by Mr. Norris during his original testimony. Again, I think it was sent on the 2nd of September. I can recirculate it. It's an Excel spreadsheet.
Oh, okay. Just want to make sure I get all bring right. So we're saying C-52 is crash data Excel spreadsheet. C-53 was auto turn analysis, recognizing that's two pages. C-54, what was identified as truck and pup diagram 2. C-55 was truck and pup diagram 1, but to not get confused, it would be helpful to think of that as the earlier truck and pup diagram. Miles' weather policy was B-99. So then, let's see. So C-55 then would be the ordinance. Is that what you suggested, Jason?
Yeah, just whatever. I guess C-56.
Sorry. Oh man. No, I'm. What was C-55? What did I do wrong just now?
Truck and pump. Truck and pump. Okay. Pup.
All right.
One.
Got it. Diagram 1, earlier truck and pump C-55, so we'll make the ordinance C-56. I mean, it's publicly available, but someone pointed out sometimes those things are hard to find, so I think it is helpful. Okay, so the only other one on here was that 617-21 RE critical areas. I wasn't sure what that specifically was referencing. Maybe Mr. Lynn?
Yes, that's a letter that the county issued requiring the critical areas assessment on the Hall Road and identifying critical areas. And I think that should be part of the record. It's, you can access it on the county's website, but it's not linked and it's not an exhibit here. So I think it should be.
Any objection to making that C-57?
No objection.
Okay. And then in terms of the appellant exhibits, 859 through 862, and I'll track Mr. Mooring as per Jason Davignon's chart here.
That looks right to me. Yes, Mr. Examiner.
Okay, and then let's see. Mr. Ehrlichman, you had, well, there was some minor discrepancies, right, that you wanted to clarify in terms of your exhibit C49F. Maybe just walk me through what the, in your mind, correct numbering is. Is it, has anything changed since the email that you sent to clarify Mr. Davignon?
No, I think Mr. Davignon and I are in agreement that our exhibits are C49, and then we have a subset or index of that, starting with S1, which is the Neil McLeod letter. And it had three attachments, 1A, 1B, 1C, and then we went on in the numbering from there and picked up exhibits today. If you want me to go through those, I can.
Just remind, I mean, you don't need to detail them, but I did take notes, but where did you end? Yes.
Sure. So we started today with S9, the bus schedule.
Yep.
S10 was the citizen letter pulled out of the earlier giant packet of written submittals. 11, S11 is the code illustrative exhibit. S12 was the excerpt of road standards. S13 was our markup of the applicant's truck graphic, which is that C55, I believe.
Yep.
And then we had S14 was table B6, the road standard dimensions standard. And I circulated an email this afternoon requesting entry of exhibit S15, which is the truck width with mirrors.
And I'm guessing I got it, but anyone have an objection to that? The proposed S15 truck with mirrors. Not hearing any, I'll allow it. Okay. So is that then, do we have your exhibits correct? Just trying to make sure.
We do, and I'd like to suggest that we might want to carve out S16 as the forthcoming Wallace Grota written submittal. I don't know how you want to handle that, but
actually, that's a great idea. Yeah, why don't we say we'll call it the Declaration of Wallace Grota.
And finally, thank you. I would like to leave to submit as S17 the parcel information on that adjacent mine that I talked about, the Prospect Mine, also on Grip Road.
I believe there was an objection to this at one point, Mr. Lynn, but any your thoughts, Mr. Lynn?
I guess I'd like to see it. Mr. Barton's already testified about the Miles plans for that facility and that there are limited resources there. So I don't think it's relevant. I guess if we had seen that ahead of time, I'd probably have a question or two for Mr. Barton about it.
All right. Well, I'll suggest, let me just say, let's allow, I'm going to allow it. I'll just allow it in. And after, we'll work on timing in a minute, but essentially, Mr. Lynn, anyone else that may have, you know, concerns can produce supplemental, very short, you know, what their concerns are. And that would be true for what has now been identified as forthcoming 16 Declaration of Grota and forthcoming S17, which is parcel data for adjacent parcel. And again, once those, what I would, well, here, timing wise, Mr. Ehrlichman, let's start there. Do you think by next Friday you could have Mr. Grota's declaration ready?
We can. Yes, okay, we can. So, thank you.
So why don't we say September 30th, and I assume the parcel data you could have immediately, but let's just do it all together. So September 30th, and then any party that wants to produce a response or has any concerns can do so. I'll treat those as pleadings as opposed to additional exhibits, or else we're going to get real lost on exhibits. But and so let's see, if it's September 30th, any response or concerns, again, which I would expect would be fairly limited. But why don't we just say the 7th, which is a week later. And that's very limited to any sort of objection or you know, response to S16 or S17, which again are part of C49. Does that make sense to the attorneys?
Yes, it does to us. Thank you.
Okay, and then we'll talk about briefing in a minute, but the briefing won't be exhibits. Those will be pleadings. So we're good then on your exhibits, to be clear.
Yes, we are. And
as to the applicant exhibits, I know things got moved somewhat. I think we ended up with B99 as the last one, which was the Miles weather policy. There's one question mark about a B96. Anyone have an idea? And if not, I'm happy, rather than mess anything up, just say, you know, nothing submitted, or I don't want to renumber anything.
I think that's fine.
Jason Davignon, go ahead.
That sounds good to me. I think it was just an exhibit where we miscounted in the middle of a hearing.
Yeah, it happens. Okay. And Mr. Lynn, that makes sense to you. You're not worried that there's some magic exhibit that won your case that is not now part of the record?
I do not think my case rises and falls on the missing exhibit 96. At least I hope not.
Okay, excellent. I think then all the exhibits have been assessed. And that is my understanding. And please weigh in otherwise. Okay. So here's my thought. I'm sure there's a hard and fast end of the day because Mr. Loring obviously has important tennis or athletic activities. And I'm giving him a hard time. We appreciate the public service of him working with students. But
I'll tell my team it came straight from you. Thanks.
There you go. What was our end? Is it 4:30? I'm not trying to belabor anyone or keep anyone long. I was going to suggest a quick break, but I was going to throw out a question for folks to think about on the break that then I want to come back and talk about. But is there anything, and I'll do a quick round robin, anything we need to address when we come back from the break before I ask, you know, sort of questions of the attorneys, other than obviously timing? Mr. Ehrlichman?
Nothing.
Okay, Mr. Diavnia?
I have nothing special, Mr. Examiner.
Okay, Mr. Lynn?
I do want to submit conditions at some point. There's a clarification of one condition that's in the special use permit. I don't know whether that's done as part of briefing, but I want to do it in such a manner that people have an opportunity to respond to that. So I'm going to suggest that maybe we do that in the same time frame as Mr. Ehrlichman's submittals by next Friday. There's just going to be a few of them, but I think it'd be best if everybody had them in writing before they were asked to respond.
Well, okay, hold that thought, Mr. Lynn, because that is something I want to talk about after the break. In terms of conditions, and I'll tip my hat. One of the things I would suggest of the other parties, and obviously for Mr. Waring, this is going to be a different question than, say, for Mr. Ehrlichman, because one involves the MDNS, the other involves the SUP. But one suggestion I was going to make would be that, you know, the other part, you know, those two in particular, were I to do the thing you hope I don't do and either deny the SEPA appeal for Mr. Loring, deny the SEPA appeal, I guess go there, and grant the SUP, are there conditions you all believe would be appropriate for me to include I guess the way to think about it theoretically is, in your minds, are there specific conditions you would like to see included were I to approve the SUP? Granting, I understand the position of the parties. I'm just trying to, sometimes it can be helpful to have things for me to consider in those circumstances. That, and I don't need your answer right now. I'm just saying that was one thing I was going to suggest. Bill Lynn has suggested there might be some alterations or clarification on the conditions that have been recommended by county staff that the applicant would like to make. But so that was thing one. And Mr. Loring, sorry, I didn't get to ask you about when we come back from the break, but
I don't have anything at the moment. Thank you.
Okay, so we'll get into that. And then the question I want to leave the parties with before we take a short break is it has to do with remedy. And essentially, you know, here's the thought I want to talk about and get your guys' thoughts on, you know, is what is the remedy? So for Mr. Loring, if we start there when we get back, you know, if I do grant your appeal, what does that ultimately potentially mean? If I deny potentially, what does that mean? I think that'll be the big one in terms of SEPA. Obviously, if I were to deny the SUP, that it is what it is. But because of the way this consolidated process works, that particular issue becomes a challenging one, as it were, in terms of if something happens with SEPA, what's the impact on everything else? So that was the question I'm hoping to get some thoughts on to start when we get back. So what I would suggest is, why don't we come back at 3? You know, I'll sort of do a round robin on questions for the attorneys. And we're, our hard and fast is 4:30. Is that right? Excellent. Okay.
Yes.
So we'll come back at 3. I note that if Mr. Ehrlichman or others has a Hawaiian shirt just sitting around, they were hoping to show, the final 90 minutes would be the time to display your best Hawaiian shirt. So with that, we'll come back in 10 minutes. Oh, Brandon's upset because he didn't wear what he thought was his best Hawaiian shirt, but it's beautifully muted. And with that, we'll be back at 3 o'clock. Thanks, everybody.